Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
High, high above the North Pole on the first day of 1969, two professors of English literature approached each other at a combined velocity of 1,200 miles per hour.
Did they collide?
You'll have to read the book to find out.
Dun, dun, dun.
So we are today talking about an interesting subject.
Definitely.
Something that is beyond the eyes of mere mortals. Unless, of course, you've put the right software on your computer or you know what you're doing.
Yeah, more or less.
Okay. Beyond the eyes of people like me, because I'm such a surface level kind of guy. We're talking about the dark web.
Yeah.
Or the dark internet.
Mm-hmm.
Or the deep web. Or the undernet. Or the deep net. Or the invisible web. Or the hidden web. There are a lot of different names for this.
Yeah.
So there are two main definitions we need to get out of the way.
Yes.
Because there are, people think of different things when these terms come up. And both things are real and need to be addressed.
Yes.
So here's the less interesting one.
Okay.
At least in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
There are machines that either were once connected to the internet or were once connected to a network that subsequently was connected to the internet that are no longer reachable on the internet.
Okay.
Okay. So let's say, like, there are entire military networks that were part of ARPANET back when ARPANET was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And ARPANET, if you guys don't know, was a predecessor to the internet. It was where a lot of the protocols that were developed for the internet first were used.
If only somebody wrote an article about that for HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, funny you should mention that. I did write an article about that, how ARPANET works. But yeah, ARPANET.
It's actually a very interesting story.
Yeah, and that is the story of creating a network that can let different machines communicate with one another.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and before, networks were mostly composed of machines that were essentially identical to each other.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they were all generally within the same space, like same building. But ARPANET was an attempt to create a network that would allow different machines running on different operating systems in different locations communicate with one another. And it grew substantially over the years that it existed. And it started to incorporate other types of networks, including military networks and research organizations. Well, some of those military networks did not keep pace with the changes that were made when the internet began to emerge. Now, ARPANET and the internet are not the same thing.
Not technically.
The internet is a network of networks, of which ARPANET was sort of kind of one, but ARPANET's essentially been offline. That's another example, is that stuff that was on ARPANET that's no longer accessible by the internet. Sometimes these machines themselves have failed and they are no longer reachable. So that information is, at least the original source of that information is lost. You might be able to find bits and pieces of that information on other sites because people have cited it or stolen it or whatever. But the actual original source of that information is gone.
You know what occurs to me?
What's that?
That we should point out, too, that that information may not have ever been on the web.
Yeah.
Because as a lot of our listeners know, but maybe not all of them, the World Wide Web is a part of the internet. It is not the entire internet. There is information that is available on a computer network that can be accessed through different means.
Yes.
And so calling it the deep web in that case, in the definition that you were just talking about, the sense that you were just talking about, may not necessarily be completely accurate because it might be found in a different form.
Very true.
Not that I'm saying that you were wrong.
No.
More of a clarification so that people understand that.
That is a great clarification because, yeah, the internet comprises so many different ways of sharing information. Email, for example, one way. File transfer protocol, another way.
Yep. Usenet. Gopher.
And then you have HTTP being the web-based way of sharing information. And yeah, when we talk about deep web, some of this information is not necessarily the kind that you would access with a normal web browser.
Right. Exactly.
So that's a good point. You might have to have some sort of emulator, or you may have to have a totally different kind of program in order to access that information.
And that sort of leads into the second sense, I think.
Yes. Yes. So that first sense is stuff that is no longer accessible, either due to machine failures or the fact that it just did not keep pace with the protocols. Or
it was disconnected for a reason.
Yeah, it is now its own intranet, but is no longer connected to the internet.
Right.
At any rate, that's stuff that maybe at one time was connected to the internet, but now no longer is, and therefore you cannot get to it. That's why we call it dark. That's that one definition. Now, here's the more super cool, awesome, spy, scary definition.
Well, in its purest sense, I would say it's not spy or scary at all.
True.
You think about the depth and breadth of the internet as you see it on a search engine. You know, you put in a search term, you get 300,000 hits plus for a topic. And you go, wow, there's a whole lot of information out there. Well, that's only the information that the web browser, that the search engine knows to go to find.
Yeah, we call that the surface web.
Yeah, yeah. And it's overused as a metaphor, but the whole iceberg thing really applies here. It is really a very, very small section of what's available on the internet as a whole. Part of it's because that's what's available on the web, and there are other protocols. It's not that Google, for example, is not searching. You know, it's not necessarily collecting all the information that's on Usenet sites and things like that. So you may or may not find the information that's out there. Some people don't want their site indexed.
Right, and they can choose not to. Just by putting in a little bit of code at the top of their page, it's essentially an instruction saying, hey, web crawlers, skip this site.
Yes.
Do not index this site. I do not want it indexed. Mm-hmm. And the web crawlers won't. They'll ignore it. They'll move on. And so then you have a website that is not indexed by any search engine. And the only way to get there is if there is another incoming link from somewhere else. Or someone's built a website and they've got an outgoing link to this other website that doesn't have any, that is not indexed by websites or web search engines rather. Or you physically give out the URL to people.
Yeah. Well, and then there's stuff that's dynamically generated, such as a search engine's results page, such as let's say you go to your bank and you want to see your balance on your account. You log in and you you know, check the balance on your account. Well, that page that you generate by logging in, checking at, you know, 2:14 p.m. and 26 seconds, that page is not indexed by anything. So that is a dark web, if you will. That's a dark web page that you alone are accessing and no one else really has access to.
Yes. So dark web includes all these databases that have terabytes and terabytes and terabytes of data that, again, will only appear in very specific sets of circumstances and otherwise doesn't. So therefore, they are not indexed.
Yep. Yottabytes even, mostly just because I wanted to say yottabytes. Yes, there is such a thing.
I'd like to grab some yottabytes after this podcast.
Mm. I mean, in its purest sense, the dark web, the invisible web, the invisible net, these are things that just aren't – they're hard to find. They're not something that you're going to find simply by – surfing around.
Or typing in a couple of terms in a search engine.
Right.
It's just not going to come up.
Yeah. So there's a whole lot out there. I mean, I use part of my website as a sandbox just to test different technologies and play around with it so I can learn more about it. And I put security access on it because I'm just fooling around. You know, I'm going to type blah, 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 blah. Ooh, look at that.
Yeah.
I could change the fonts. I could, you know.
And then I want to see what this under construction GIF looks like on my site.
Well, you know,
this looping MIDI is so much more awesome than that looping MIDI.
Wow, this browser totally still supports that marquee tag.
This is where Jonathan, it's clear that Jonathan has not built a website since 1994.
Anyhow. Yes, that is part of that. All is part of the dark web, and therefore there is nothing particularly sneaky. You have a very funny look on your face.
I was just thinking back to my old. I was thinking back to actual websites I built back in 1994. That's the problem. All right, sorry.
So, we did have somebody who was asking about this.
Yes,
and
we have not revealed your identity, dark web person. Your secret is safe with us.
Deep web, anyway,
or her. Let's not narrow it down too much. Him or her.
Okay. So the thing is, there is – and you think about it and you're going, well, okay, I get it. But that's not really all that interesting. It's not necessarily, but people are using the inability to find this stuff to their advantage.
Yeah.
They might be hiding secret information or – you know, information that might get them in trouble with the law.
Or they just don't like the idea of companies, websites, governments being able to track all their movements.
What?
Yeah. There are plenty of people
out
there.
They do know this is the 21st century, right? Yeah. Have they talked to Mark Zuckerberg?
Have they?
Privacy is a thing of the past.
Have they read George Orwell?
That was 20th century.
There you go. It was. And look how far we've come. One of the concerns about using the internet for a lot of people is that a lot of the stuff you do is trackable. There are records of what you do. I mean, this has been in the news recently because Google has changed its privacy policy where it's going to be sharing the information it gathers across multiple Google products in order to shape results for you personally, which means that it's actually actively using your history of navigating the web. And that freaks a lot of people out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of people want to know, as of the day we're recording this, that happened yesterday, March 1st. And, people have been making a big deal out of it ever since Google had announced it. And plus they put it on all the sites. There's a little banner at the top saying this stuff matters, which I thought was kind of funny.
They actually make it easy for you to look at what the history of your web searching is, so that way you can choose to
– And you can get rid of it.
Yeah, you can choose to delete it if you want. You can keep it. I mean, the purpose of that from Google's perspective is to give you the best service possible, but there are people who have brought up the concerns, and I think they are completely legitimate concerns, that the fact that you have this history that's personalized, individualized to a very specific user – that's troublesome, because what happens if another entity comes in that isn't concerned about giving you a great experience, but is more concerned about finding out exactly what you've been up to for, a nefarious purpose? And that might be that you could be a perfectly innocent person and still have problems arise because there's this information about your habits when you're out there surfing the web or using the internet in some way. And so there are people who have used this part of the web, this kind of idea of the this anonymous, untrackable sort of web presence, to be able to navigate through without leaving a trail.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in some cases, it is to do something that is not necessarily ethically in the green, right? I mean, it's some stuff, some of the stuff is really illegal, unethical, nasty stuff.
Yeah, well, it's like everything else. You've got the technology to do this.
Yes.
It can be used for
good or bad.
Yeah, for good or bad. Like, for example, Google basically says when you sign up, hey, look, Jonathan, just between you and us, we're going to collect this information, and as a result of us collecting this information, we're going to be able to tailor this for you. We're not going to look at your records. We don't care where you go. This is all going to be stored on a computer, and between you and us, you'll get a really great experience. And Jonathan may say, well, okay, I mean, hey, just between me and you guys, I think we're good. You know, I don't mind that you're collecting this stuff, because I want a positive experience. I want to visit a site and my password just to go in there and blam, I'm right there.
Yeah.
The thing is, what if somebody breaks into the server? Or what if there's an unethical employee or somebody who gets ticked off at the company and says, you know what, I'm going to steal some customers' information and make this company's life miserable by giving them bad PR. I mean, it could be used for something like that, although the company may not necessarily be trying to do that. On the flip side of that, people might be saying, you know what, I'm just uncomfortable with you having that information. And the other people might be saying, I'm uncomfortable for you having this information because I don't want to get thrown in jail.
Yeah.
So there's a positive and a negative for all these things.
Right. So you've got people who are using it to do stuff like pirate material. Yeah. So if you created a database online and you did not have any pointers to this site, so no web search engines are going to be pulling up this site, and you distribute the information some other way to the people that you want to visit your site, then theoretically you could host stuff, and the likelihood that you would get caught would be lower, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there are people who do this where, you know, you hear about like the big peer-to-peer networks and everything because
sure.
those are the ones that get a lot of focus and they are searchable.
Yeah.
But then there are other ones that are not searchable, and
right.
there are plenty of them that exist out there. It's still just as illegal to use them, but they are evading detection more effectively. I think, you know, the organizations that are concerned about intellectual property have to make sure that they get the services of people who are aware of the dark web in order to be able to police that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there, it's also used for things like a journalist who might be overseas in a country that is not so concerned about offering the press free speech as other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And that journalist may want to be able to publish reports that are unfavorable to a regime in that country. And using something like the dark web in order to get that information out could protect the journalist or the journalist's sources. So let's say like the journalist is overseas talking to a government official and trying to communicate with this government official who does not approve of the regime's policies. Well, that official could very potentially be in serious danger for sharing that information.
Mm-hmm.
Using some sort of untrackable, anonymous software or doing this over the web in a way that's not searchable or trackable
mm-hmm.
would be very important in that case. And so there are tools that are out there for people to use. And again, just like Chris said, the tools are neutral.
The tools are tools.
Yeah, they're just tools. But there are tools
just
out there.
Just like me.
Yeah. So like Freenet, that's an example.
Now, we've talked about Freenet before.
Yeah.
It was some time ago. I think about a year ago, as a matter of fact, because we were talking about the using the internet to communicate protests
mm-hmm.
and other information in countries where the government is aggressive about finding and punishing people for speaking their mind.
Yes.
In that country. Of course, we've over the last couple of years, we've had a lot of that in many countries around the world where people are
getting the word out about stuff that's going on, people who are being jailed for being dissidents. People are trying to find ways to communicate with one another to establish protests. The government is watching. The law enforcement authorities in that area are watching to see if they can crack down on these protests to keep it from becoming worldwide, to keep it from gathering more support. So these folks are trying to find ways to share information without bringing down the authorities on them. And software like Freenet is one way that they can do that. And in fact, some people were setting up servers over the past couple years where people could speak their mind and it wouldn't disclose their location.
Yeah.
Which – and a lot of people who were supporters of democracy for these governments that were not necessarily so democratic – you know, they were saying, oh, well, this is a good thing. We're giving people an opportunity to speak their mind, that we're giving them freedom of speech where they had none before.
Right.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, right. Which is different than empathy, yeah. Right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, another example is the Onion Router, or Tor.
I've used that myself on my own computer, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, you may have heard of Tor. And Tor is part of a project called Anonymity Online.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about being able to access the internet anonymously, where there's not going to be any tracking. You have to pair this with some other software sometimes, depending on what it is you're trying to do. But in general, what its purpose is so that you can go through and find out what you need to find without leaving a trace of what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
Which can be really important depending on what it is. Like maybe you're a whistleblower, maybe you're in a huge company and you've seen something that's truly unethical and you feel it is your responsibility, since you know about it, to reveal this. But you also know that if you do this, you could have some serious problems in your personal life mm-hmm. further down the line. Well, that's sort of the kind of tool you might want to look into if you were to do such a thing, right? So the way Tor does it is kind of interesting. They do it through a distributed network.
Mm-hmm.
So distributed networks, you know, we talked about it. Again, it's kind of similar to peer-to-peer networks.
Well, in a way, it's a lot of it has some similarity to the people who are conducting hacker attacks.
Yeah.
Because as we – again, another thing that we've talked about on occasion is how it can be difficult to trace exactly where an attack comes from, or it can be possible to spoof another address, say, you know, make it appear as though an attack is coming from a country to go, you know, hey, they're the ones doing it.
Yeah, China's attacking us. And then if you were to really look at it, you might realize that the attackers came from a totally different country, but they yep. had spoofed it, or they had created a zombie army where they had infected computers within China. So mm-hmm. the attacks were coming from China. It's just they were being masterminded from computers that were in a totally different country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing about computers is that it's entirely possible for you to be able to cover your tracks or to obfuscate where you are working from and make it appear that someone else, some patsy, is really the one in charge of the actual attack.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tor works in a similar fashion to that. Basically, it uses this array of servers to mask your location.
Right. So, so the way it works normally with internet traffic is that if I'm sending a request to a server for me to get, let's just say, a web page back,
mm-hmm.
then that request is going to go out in packets across the internet with a header and a footer that gives the information about where it's going, and then once it gets to where it is, the request gets received, the server responds, sends it back my way, not necessarily in the same pathway that my request went, and then it gets to my machine puts it all together, and then I can look at the web page.
Mm-hmm.
With Tor, each jump from one server to one machine to another is unique, and it's unique to that, like the information is unique to that jump, so that when I send my request out, it goes to a server on the Tor network.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the server on the Tor network doesn't know that it needs to go to this specific destination. It just knows that it has to send this request to a second server that's in the Tor network.
Mm-hmm.
So that request goes to that server within the Tor network. Now, that server doesn't know where the request originated from. It knows that it got it from server number one, but it doesn't know who sent the request to server number one,
mm-hmm.
right? So server number two is like, all right, well, server number one sent this to me. I'm supposed to send it to server number three. Goes to server number three. Server number three doesn't know about server number one. It just knows that a request came from server number two. It definitely doesn't know about you who sent the request in the first place. And it does this all the way across the network until it gets to where it's supposed to be. And then it comes back in that same pathway. And there's no way for any individual machine to know what the origin point or destination point was, except for the ones that were immediately adjacent to those points.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it protects your identity because you can't track where this traffic's going. There's no way to figure it out because these machines are – if you were the only one using this network, sure, then they'd be able to tell. But with all the information passing across, it's impossible to say who sent what when and where this information was going and what was inside it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, Tor requires that you install some software on your computer, which basically, you know, uses your browser. You could turn it on and off. Which is nice in a way. I did test it just to play around with a couple of years ago because I thought it was kind of interesting and you know how it masks your identity. So I found out two things. One, you know, I tried it and then I went to see where it said I was coming from. You know, I did I traced the route and it said I was in Sweden, which is really great. Except it made me hungry for lingonberries. And then the next thing,
I was thinking meatballs.
Yeah, I knew. Well, that's, you know, a cliche. And then the other thing is because it is traveling so much farther. Now, remember we've talked about you make a request of the over the internet. The information goes from one computer to the other computer to the other computer until it gets to the other location, and then it sends it, you know, back until it reaches your machine.
Yeah.
When you go through Tor, it does that through a whole lot more computers, and it slows everything down. So
right.
If you want to be private. For whatever reason, you can use this software, but it will slow things down.
Yeah, yeah.
Just be aware.
That's true. That's pretty much true with every security system, too. Anytime you have some encryption or whatever, it's going to affect the speed of the transmission. Yeah, that's one of the trade-offs you have for increased security. And Tor goes beyond just web browsing. You know, I use that as my example, but it's also used for things like instant messaging or remote logins. Mm-hmm. You can even create an instance where you're creating a rendezvous point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that you want to create a discussion area for some political reason. Like, let's say you're in a potentially dangerous situation overseas, you know, in some country where the regime is cracking down on internet access and mm-hmm. internet communications. You might want to be able to set up a space where you and two or three or more people can have a discussion about something, but not have it pop up in a very popular or publicly visible way, like on Twitter or Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though those tools have been really useful, it's also true that if you use them a lot, then there's the chance that it could either get shut down or that authorities could track you or that authorities could infiltrate your communications. So if you're using something that's below the radar, that's not being broadcast publicly, you have a better chance of maintaining that security.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tor would let you do things like set up essentially what would be like a chat room or a forum among a bunch of people that is not visible to anyone else. And it does it through this distributed network way where the person who creates the instance lets people know, hey, I'm building this thing on blah, blah, blah. When they respond, until someone responds, there's no rendezvous point.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't actually create anything. And when that person responds, then one computer, one server on this system is designated as the place where that will live for as long as it needs to.
Mm-hmm.
And then the different computers will have to travel via the normal Tor method to that particular server in order to interact with it. But this, again, maintains that level of anonymity that is necessary for situations where you're talking about life and limb, you know, scenarios.
Yep.
So, it's interesting stuff. And like we said, you know, their military has been using this. Actually, in fact, Tor, the Onion Router, was a product of the United States Naval, branch of the military. It was a Navy project that ends up now being used by lots of different, people, including civilians. But yeah, businesses use it. Law enforcement uses it. It's been very instrumental in lots of different uses other than the one that everyone thinks about, which is to do something sneaky and criminal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, the only thing that's come out of my navel is lint, so that's really impressive.
I'll tell you what you're going to give up for lint.
Well,
puns.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But the thing is to note, this stuff is on the internet, and that's actually its biggest flaw. When you go back to the original sense that Jonathan mentioned earlier, when stuff is just disconnected from the internet, that's the easiest way to protect information on the dark web. Once you make it connected to that giant network of networks that we've become accustomed to using, that makes it more findable. A lot of stuff is not completely unfindable. So, for example, let's say you have your robots.txt file and you say, I don't want my page to be indexed. That doesn't mean it's not there and it can't be accessed by people, but it might mean that Google and Bing and the other search engines just say, oh, okay, well, hey, we'll leave you alone. You don't have to be in our directory. But that doesn't mean it can't be found.
Right.
Nothing's
stopping. Let's say an incredibly popular website could post a link and that would do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's, it would be another step to get to where you needed to go, but it would make that dark website, very easy to access.
Well, okay. So, Jonathan and I have created a secret file sharing thing, and we're going to, let's just make it interesting by making it nefarious. So we're going to, share all these, you know, video files and all sorts of other stuff. But the thing is,
we're sharing all the good Star Wars movies. So 4, 5, and 6, and all the good Star Trek movies. So every other one.
So, the thing is, Jonathan set up this site. And he's emailed me. So
many Bothans died to bring us this site.
So the Bothans send me the email.
Yeah.
And, okay, so it's between you and me, right?
Right.
Nobody else knows about it.
Right.
Except there's a trace of that email on every server that it touched between you and me.
Yes.
Plus, you know, we have ISPs, and they have that information somewhere on file. Now, they're not going to go looking through all – they don't have time to look through all that
stuff. Yeah, there's no way. There's just so much data.
But it's there.
Yes. So if someone else hears about this, like if I become Mr. Flappy Gums and I walk outside and I'm like
– You should look into that gingivitis problem.
Yeah, I probably should. And I say, man, Chris and I, we shared episode 4 Star Wars New Hope 18 times between the two of us for no apparent reason. And I'm just chatting away. Well, then there's a chance someone goes to someone else that goes to someone else goes to someone else. And next thing you know, you've got authorities looking into it and they say, all right, well, if we can't find this site directly, what other routes can we look at in order to build a case against these two idiots and find out whether or not they're really, breaking the law? And if so, how hard we can punish them? And the answer to that, by the way, is very, very hard.
Yeah, the chances are that the user agreement that Jonathan and I have between our internet service providers says that they're not going to give up our information unless the law enforcement authorities come knocking at their door with a warrant saying, hey, we believe that these guys are up to no good. Cough over the records. And in which case they're going to say, okay, well, if you've got a legitimate reason to worry about it, here you go.
This is why the various pieces of legislation around the world, really, but in the United States are the ones that we're mostly familiar with. Things like DMCA, SOPA, and PIPA. Why these were such a huge deal, because it was one of those things that people were worried the government would get too much authority to be able to snoop in on what you were doing. And whether you were doing something wrong or not wasn't the point. It was the fact that it was almost like an unreasonable search and seizure kind of approach to information. Like, it wasn't necessarily your personal property in the sense of physical things you owned, but it was your information, which is more and more becoming something like property to people.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's and also there the whole SOPA and PIPA thing was for a while also a concern for people who use Tor.
Sure.
And that it looked like services like Tor could be at threat because of some of the various kinds of laws that are being proposed around the world. ACTA is another great example.
Mm-hmm.
That's one that's global. It's not the United States, just the United States anyway. And there's a lot of concern that this kind of legislation is specifically taking aim at services that have legitimate, legal, and one could argue pro-humanity reasons to use them, and yet those would get wiped off just as easily as the piracy stuff. And so the question that a lot of people have is the damage that's being done by piracy, which, by the way, is completely impossible to define. We cannot define how much damage piracy does.
Yeah.
We just can't.
Right.
It does do damage. Don't get me wrong. We just can't define how much it is. But is that indefinable amount of damage greater than the good that an anonymous web gives us?
Mm-hmm.
And if it is greater, then maybe we have to look at wiping it all out. Personally, this is just my own personal opinion, not representative of anyone else. I seriously doubt that, but because I look around at the world and how the world is changing, like the events of the Arab Spring, and I think if it weren't for the fact that we have these outlets, then these social changes, which in many cases look like they are long overdue, may still not have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be unfortunate for people who are living under oppressive regimes who just don't have any opportunities like a lot of the rest of the world does. So mm-hmm. Now that's my own personal opinion. Jonathan's getting off his soapbox.
Mm-hmm. So in short, you know, the deep web, the invisible internet, this is just information that, that the average person is not going to be able to find easily. It could be anything from people planning a hate crime or an act of terrorism to people planning their next big venture, and they just don't want it to become public before they can make a sensation and ruin Facebook's day by coming out with something even better.
To like 50 hard drives that are holding databases of information that are not relevant unless you put in a specific query.
Sure.
You would not want that searchable on the internet because it would be totally useless.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, it's a simple definition, but it, you know, there's a lot to it. And when you start thinking about it, there are some ethical questions involved.
Yeah. But your iceberg comparison at the top of the show was very apt because, again, the stuff that we see on the web is a fraction of what is out there.
It's, from what I understand, it is a fraction of 1% of the information that can be accessed over the internet.
Yeah.
Which, when you think about the billions and trillions of web pages out there, many of which have MIDI files embedded in them and scrolling text.
I mean,
under construction guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's amazing to think about because there's a vast amount of information that is accessible to us.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal.
But, you know, and that's just one of those things that when you think about it, you step back and you think about this vast amount of information, and you just go, wow, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. Who would have thought that we'd have come up with that much stuff?
Yep.
And I have to write about all of it.
Well, some of it.
Speaking of which, I need to get back to that. So let's wrap up this discussion. Guys, if you have any suggestions for future topics that we should tackle, you should email us. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com or send us a message via Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is techstuffhsw, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.